Well, like Bob, who preceded me, I too didn't start as an activist. I don't think I'm an activist still yet, although some of the things I do, I think, may have an influence on people. I, for most of my professional life, I've been a basic scientist, a bench scientist, working on biological variables that influence behavior. Note that I said influence. I didn't say determine behavior. I've worked on hormones. I've worked on particular areas of the brain and how they may affect the behavior, emotions, motivation, and such things as those. But I think my research has always expressed a interest in and an involvement in how these biological variables interact with life experiences. As I got a little bit older, I began to stop doing bench research and began to write, and so I written a series of books. And it's interesting to me. I didn't plan it that way, but each book has sort of led to the next book. So when I wrote a book about the history of prefrontal lobotomy, it was clear that they stopped doing lobotomies, or they have never stopped completely, but it certainly dropped off in terms of the numbers performed dramatically when the psychotropic drugs, chlorpromazine being the first, or thorazine, was introduced. So I became interested, and they called thorazine at that time, as its effectiveness was claimed to be, it was performing a chemical lobotomy, which was a term that was being used. So I became interested because I knew something of the history, and I knew when these drugs were introduced in the mid-1950s that we didn't even know that the brain neurons used neurotransmitters to communicate. It wasn't known. It was a big controversy about that. In fact, that's the topic of my book that's coming out this summer. So Braming the Brain really started as an attempt to see how did these biochemical theories of mental illness, and mental illness is caused by some kind of biochemical imbalance, how did those theories emerge, and the explanations of what drugs were doing, which were based, of course, on their effect on neurotransmitters. How did these emerge? Well, I only have 8 minutes. I'll try to take that seriously. What I learned as a result of doing the research for this book is that the explanation, for example, I'll talk about depression. The explanation for depression, the biological explanation that's a justification for drugs and biochemical theories, is that that serotonin, there is a serotonin deficiency, and the argument can be made to sound very seductive. It's not only do they claim that they find a serotonin deficiency in patients that are depressed, but if you use some kind of drugs that reduce serotonin activity, you precipitate a depression. Three, that all the drugs that have an antidepressant activity, I know in this audience there will be few people who admit that there are any in that category, but in any case, the claim is all the drugs that are being marketed as antidepressants elevate serotonin activity. Turns out none of those things are really true. It is not true that most depressed patients have a deficiency in serotonin. There are a few studies that report that on average. There are just as many studies that don't find it at all. And even the studies that report it on average, that's the important word, on average, because if you look at the distribution of the patients whose serotonin activity has been studied, the majority of depressed patients have perfectly normal serotonin levels. It's not true that if you reduce serotonin activity with some kind of drugs, the first drug that was used was Reserpin, but there are a lot of more sophisticated drugs that selectively reduce serotonin. People do not become depressed. Some people who are recovered depressed people, and depression, of course, has a tendency to reassert itself in many instances, may have a relapse. If you mess up their biochemistry, if you mess up, do a lot of things, there are no controls. People just sort of confirm their hypotheses by manipulating serotonin with some kind of drugs. And for those people who have a history of depression, they may have a relapse. But for people who have had no such history, you can reduce their serotonin levels quite severely. They may become a little more tired, less active in terms of motor, in terms of movement, but they don't become depressed in terms of mood. And while it's true that most drugs that are marketed as antidepressants do elevate serotonin level, there are a couple of things that are relevant here. First of all, since the first ones that were introduced did that, the other companies that wanted to get their slice of the marketing pie just simply duplicated those drugs, or at least produced drugs that were similar enough so they could get their own patent. It's called the least patentable difference chemically. or Me Too drugs is another term that is used. But it's simply not true that they all antidepressants do that. In fact, the best-selling antidepressant in France, it's marketed by a company called Servier, is a drug called tianeptine. If anyone's interested, I can spell it out for you later. But that drug does just the opposite of SSRIs. Well, the SSRIs, as you know, as the name implies, are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which means it prevents them from, it keeps the serotonin in the synapse and presumably prolongs its activity. This drug, tianeptine, does just the opposite. It withdraws the serotonin from the synapse and therefore shortens its activity, and it's being marketed as an antidepressant. The last factor is that the truth is that antidepressants are not nearly as effective as claimed. There are a number of studies, I think people here know them just as well as I, if not better, that show that the difference between antidepressants and placebos are either extremely slight or non-existent, and even when they're slight, there is a matter of the fact that people on placebos often, in most cases, or at least 75% of the cases, if asked to make a guess, know that they're in the placebo group. So it's not a completely blind study. There are some people who report that what should be used are what are called active placebos. That is, people know they're not getting the real drug because they don't feel any physiological buzz, so to speak. There's nothing in me, nothing happening. But if you give them something that will create that kind of feeling that there is something active in them but has nothing to do with the action of the drug that's under study, then the difference between placebos and antidepressants in terms of their efficacy almost disappears. And I haven't even introduced into the equation the fact that there are a lot of adverse side effects. Anyway, about yeah. Pardon me? Sorry? Yes. Yes. I'm aware of those reports, and they're making that. I don't know how effective it is, but it's on the small print on the labels now. required to do that. In terms of having an effect, I mean, as I said, I didn't start, as Bob also said, to change the world. I was really sort of writing a history of science. But I've gotten a lot of invitations to talk to psychiatrists. You know, at universities, some very prestigious ones do give a talk at grand rounds. And I only gave a little bit of this evidence and counter arguments. I didn't do justice to either side. But I do at those meetings with professional groups, and I always get challenged, particularly by the chairman of the department and all the big guns in the department, so to speak, who have huge grants. From who you know whom, they challenge me, and I'm pleased to say that I can hold my own with these guys, and the young residents, and I think that's where I'm having some effectiveness. The young residents always come up to me afterwards, always checking to make sure the chairman of the department isn't within earshot, and say they agree with me, and that they think they're becoming pharmacists instead of what they thought they were entering when they joined psychiatry. I think it's important to talk to people like that. You can't only preach to the believers. That's not very effective. You just sort of reinforce yourselves and bring no one else aboard. I think talking to the people who are administering these drugs and getting them to think of what is the rationale for what they're doing is one way of being effective. There are a lot of other ways that people are exploring in this group. But I have to say, because of having spent my life looking at biological variables as they interact with life experiences, even with animals, that I have sort of going around talking to people and having written this book, I find that I have a lot of allies that I didn't ask for, and sometimes I'm even embarrassed by, in the sense that there are a lot of people who think there's something evil about looking at biological variables. I'm getting a lot of head nods here. Who could they possibly be? Believe me, my email is flooded with them. People who misunderstand my message and think that any attempt to look at some kind of biological contribution to proneness to develop a mental disorder, that there's something unethical about it, that it necessarily implies that you're denying life experiences as playing an extremely important role as well. So I think genetics is a good example. When I started as an undergraduate right after World War II, having served in the Army right from high school for 4 years, the whole field of genetics was something evil about it. If anyone explained any kind of behavior that had a genetic basis, because of the history of the eugenics movement and because of the Nazi racism and so on, there was just a feeling that there was something evil about genetics. Now, I think anyone who maintains that point of view and doesn't think that genetics has evolved and it's possible to be interested in genetics today without incorporating some of those things that people in the past have done. And I think that are mistaken and are deluding themselves and doing themselves an injustice in that they will be dismissed as just being Philistines, not informed. So I think that it's important to keep an open mind, and it's perfectly okay to look at the possibility of biological variables playing a role. It's that's something else from prematurely intervening and trying to manipulate a brain or treat people when you don't really understand what's going on. Well, I probably, in spite of what I said, I'm sure I've talked for more than 8 minutes. But
Jata